All right, I hope you brought your workbooks with you tonight. All right. Tonight we're going to be starting on page 3 of your workbook, page number 3. And I'm not going to read through the material that you've already read, but when I read through it, I highlighted it and made some notes, and so I'll just make some comments as we work our way through. But, you know, when I found this article by Rob Flood, I thought, you know, he's got some really, really helpful comments here that can be of great help to each of us in our communication, especially in our families. And I thought it was interesting, you know, that he mentions there on page number 4 at the top there that about how we can say one thing, but our spouse or the other person that's listening hears something different. And that's especially true in a marriage situation because, you know, we know that in like his first example there, he says, "What's for dinner?" And then she says, "I can't believe you haven't prepared dinner again tonight." Well, obviously, he had made that kind of a comment in the past, and so she's just assuming that asking what's for dinner is leading to the same situation again. And, you know, she's obviously reading into it, and he may not have said it as nicely as he could. But, you know, we've been there, done that. You know, I'm sure all of us have experienced situations like that where we say one thing, but the other person reads it the wrong direction, just maybe by our tone of voice. It may be by the timing involved. It may be by our attitude, but it leads that way. Then he talks about the intentional communication, and some of the questions in the end talk about the intentional communication. But when he's talking about that, he's talking about we need to have communication that we purposely direct. We purposely guide it. And then he goes on and he gives us these 5 principles here in you know, they're extremely good principles that can be a great help to us. And he mentions these for our benefit here. The first one, the principle of first response. And this is something that when I first read that, I thought, you know, that is very, very true. But it's something we don't often think of. You know, when someone says something to us, we have the opportunity to decide how the conversation is going to go, depending on how we respond to that. If they say something a bit sharp to us, you know, and we return a soft answer, where does the Bible tell us we should have a soft answer that turns away wrath? Yeah. Where does it say that? There you go. It's right there for us. All right. Verse 15:1. All right, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. All right, so we can make a choice on how we respond, and God wants us to respond in the right way. And, you know, I think back over different times when I've been in situations where there's been sharp words or unkind words or an unhealthy situation, and a lot of times it's probably my own fault because I respond wrongly. And it was great how he uses Jesus here as an illustration. And you think about that. There's a lot of times in Jesus' ministry, and he just gives a couple of little references here, but when Jesus was cornered and they were asking him hard questions and they were throwing things at him, you know, verbally to try to get him to say the wrong thing, and Jesus never responded in a wrong way back to them. And he did not come back with a counter argument against them or stir them up, but he answered them calmly. And it reminded me of, most of you haven't listened to the whole thing, but of Greg Kokel, that you've listened to some of what his arguments were that we were talking about are in apologetics, trying to answer people's hard questions. And I've listened to Kokel's stuff many times now, again and again, because I want it to sink in. And a lot of times, this is really what he's talking about here. It's how you respond. They ask you a hard question, and if you respond the wrong way, you dig yourself right into a problem that's going to make it hard for you to get out. But if you turn it around sometimes by asking them another question, or turning it around and saying it slightly in a different way. You can avoid it coming back at us. And, you know, even like Coco would say that when somebody asks you a hard question that you really don't have an answer for and don't know quite what to say, instead of jumping right in and answering it, back up and, you know, and ask them maybe why they would ask a question like that or what they're trying to get at by that question. And it lets them explain what they're after. And sometimes they're just plain trying to set a trap for them. And we'll face the same thing. People ask us things and they're trying to get us to fall for some trap, really. And sometimes maybe in our own personal relationships that'll happen as well. But what's it going to take, you know, as you think about this first principle here, the principle of first response, how we're going to respond right the first time. What's it going to take for us to be able to do that consistently? What are we going to have to do in order to consistently do that? Yeah, we're going to need God's help. That's right. Holy Spirit's help. That's one thing for sure. What else?
The old trick of count to ten.
Yeah, there's a good one.
Don't jump straight in with your first thought because okay. It's likely to be a hostile one.
Okay. So in other words, stay calm and take your time. All right. Anything else?
Think before you speak.
Okay. You think before you speak. That goes hand in hand with what Peter just said there. Yeah. Thinking before we speak. Yes, that's a good one. Humility, to be able to do this, I mean, to be able to actually say, all right, they're attacking me, and I got a choice. I can either attack back, or I can humble myself, let them throw stones at me, and I'll address it in a calm way. We got to make a choice.
Also, knowing the person that you're conversing with, getting to know them, it's harder, of course, with a total stranger. Hmm. Up on Murray Island once, I went in to see an islander couple, and the wife was there sweeping the floor, and I said, what a beautiful day, and she jumped down my throat and called me everything around the place, and I said, you guys are all the same, you just want to go fishing with my husband, don't you? Apparently they had a conversation with him wanting to go fishing, and I just walked in and said, glorious day. But, you know, knowing that she's like that, I was able to understand that that's where she was coming from, probably her husband's fault for stirring the pot to start off with. But knowing the person and why they are saying what they're saying and perhaps what trials they're going through, it's really important with communication to know the person you're addressing.
You know, along with that same thing there, you just mentioned there, knowing the trials they're going through. You know, a lot of times we respond, you stop and think about it, a lot of times we respond in a wrong way because of the circumstances that we're going through. And it doesn't justify it, but I mean, if we've had a really bad day or we've just been, we've been super, super, super busy and don't even have, hardly seem to have time to breathe, and then somebody asks us something, we're more likely to respond in a sharper way. It doesn't justify it, but if we can keep that in mind, you know, especially like, if I'm going to ask my wife something or we're going to talk about something that I know is a little bit touchy and I know that she's had a hard time or had a difficult day, I need to take that into consideration or because she's going to maybe say things that don't come out the way that they would have if she was more relaxed about the situation. All right, any other thoughts on that? Any other things that you can think of that would go hand in hand with that?
Well, if you've got anything to say to your wife or your husband, usually, if the wife is at home and she's had trouble with the kids all day, and she's usually saying to the kids, wait until your dad gets home. You know? And then as soon as dad walks in the front door, oh, I've had a terrible day, talk to so-and-so. That's the last thing that he wants to hear when he comes home from work. He's had a hard day too.
That's number three, the timing principle.
Yeah, the timing.
Think about the situation beforehand.
Well, another thing here that goes hand in hand with what we're talking about here on this first one here is determination. You know, it really does take it a determined spirit to say, I'm determined, I'm not going to do, especially if we've got a habit of this. You know, if we get a habit of just responding wrongly to words that are said, then we need to determine in our heart with God's help that Sasha brought up at the very beginning. We need God's help, but then that determination that said, I'm going to get victory over this. I'm going to conquer this. And I know it's a problem. And, you know, a lot of times we justify ourselves. It's if they wouldn't have said that, then I wouldn't have responded like that. And we go into those kind of things. And that's just making excuses. So we need to be very careful and determined. Then the second one here, the principle of physical touch. I hadn't really even thought about that, but I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I think probably all of us could agree with that, that, you know, it's hard to have an argument with someone who you are tenderly touching. And, you know, just the idea of being near each other can be of help to us. And one of the things that he says on the top of page 6 there that I highlighted that so we had a choice at this point. He said we could stop fighting so that we could keep touching, or we could stop touching so we could keep fighting. And I thought, there's a lot of truth in that. All right. And yet, it's something we need to take to heart. And we ask ourselves, you know, why is this true? Why would touching each other in a tender way, why would that help us to deal with things right?
Well,
Garrett?
It just does.
Garrett?
Well, I think because it probably doesn't really even matter how long you've been married, but just like your brain and every part of you knows that that's a good thing. It's a close thing, because you're touching each other. So when you're in that moment, not just mentally, but physically, feeling being close, you can't have both. You can't be arguing with someone and kind of have that as well. So I think doing that kind of forces you to.
Yeah.
Switch off the other side of it.
Yeah. And I guess that's why he said right there at the top, you got a choice. You can either stop fighting so you can keep touching, or stop touching so you can keep fighting. And that really is the bottom line. But it's a good principle. Something here we need to focus on, because touching helps to keep us calm. Touching will help to keep us calm. And then this next one here is a classic, the proper timing. And, you know, I'm sure we could all tell stories of wrong timing. Boy, I'm a classic at that. I seem to always find the wrong time to say the right thing. But there in Proverbs 15:23, a man hath joy by the answer of his mouth, and the words fitly spoken in due season, how good is it? We need to have the right season, the right time. And when we say even good things in the wrong time, it can get us into trouble. And I think, what would be the key of this? You know, if those of you, especially if you've been married any length of time, what would you say is the key to finding the right time, or knowing the right time, or knowing the wrong time? Well, any thoughts on that, Sasha?
Patience.
Okay, patience. But what else would be involved in how do I determine what is the right time? Garrett?
I guess the first obvious thing would be to observe the environment. What's happening? What are they doing right now? Just look around you. If I said now, No.
Yeah. I mean, some things are pretty obvious. I mean, if you've got company over, for example, that's not the time to bring up some touchy issue between the two of you. I mean, that's pretty obvious. So that's an exaggeration of it. But at the same time, by getting to know our spouse and caring about their feelings, that empathy, then we know that certain times are not easy times for them. You know, in my situation, I've learned the hard way. Don't talk before mealtime. She's in work mode then, getting the meal on, and it's time to eat, and we're both hungry, and I bring up some question then, and it's like, she just can't think of two things at the same time. And if I bring up that, then, you know, that's not a good thing. All right?
Or just if you're almost asleep.
Yep, that's another time. And, you know, along with that same thing about sleep, you know, I mean, you've probably all experienced this too, and this isn't any fun. It's a terrible thing to have those kind of talks just before bed. And then you lay there for 2 or 3 hours because you can't go to sleep because you just had an unpleasant talk. And so that's not the best time.
It's worse than somebody's tapping you on the shoulder. You're just about ready to go to sleep, or you're just drifting off.
Yeah.
And he wants to talk.
Yeah.
Are you awake?
Yeah.
Well, no, I am now.
Yeah. So, just... Yep.
When everything is calm, it would be when both parties are calm.
Yes. Yeah. And when you're not in a rush. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And look
good.
At the body language, too.
Mm.
But also, not really watching football. I mean, that's one that's not necessary.
Well, that should do it.
Yeah, but I mean, not everyone. You're just watching the football, it's not important. Turn it off and have a talk.
Yeah.
Now I realise that Sarah and I are the only ones who haven't got a husband.
But you both have had. You both have had, so you understand the situation. So
I'm having more problems with my children than what I ever had with my husband.
Right, so
it's getting to the stage in my life that they're trying to tell you, they're telling me what I should do,
yeah.
Not the other way around.
So anyway, with the timing is very, very important, yeah. And choosing a poor time never is very productive, and it leads toward arguments and unhappiness and not really resolving whatever the issue was. So we need to be careful about that. Then the principle of mirroring. That's another thing that I didn't really grow up thinking about, this kind of a thing. And, you know, how about you guys? Has that been something you've been accustomed to regularly, or is that something that's somewhat new? Mirroring. And when he's talking about, all right, so I say something to you. It's page number 7. I'd say something to you, and then you repeat it back to me to make sure that you caught it right. So it's by mirroring, it's like letting it come back.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then, you know, so when I say something to Melody, and then I say to her, now, do you understand what I said? Or she may say, oh, well, you just said this. Is that what you meant? No, that's not what I meant. I meant this. All right, well then, you know. So that's, and he even talks about it in here. He discusses that. He says sometimes she would say things that were actually true, but he didn't like it because he didn't want to admit it. She really did read him right, but he didn't like how she was reading him. So this mirroring principle where you're repeating back to the other one, if you have trouble with your spouse misunderstanding you or accusing you of something you said that wasn't exactly what you said, then this mirroring principle is one you really need to put into practice. So that you're actually repeating to each other, this is what I heard you say, did I read you right? Did I understand that correctly?
You want to make sure she's listening, though.
Yeah, well, that's a problem, too. It's not usually her, it's usually the other way around.
Sometimes it's a friend that gives you something that he doesn't always.
So that goes for all this communication. No matter who we're talking to, they need to understand. And us guys, I think, are probably notorious for this more than the girls. But, you know, you could be doing something. Like if I'm busy working on something and Melody says something to me, sometimes I kind of hear she said a little bit of something and it runs right in one and out the other and I just keep on going. And then later on she says, didn't you hear what I said? What? Well, are you talking to me?
Someone wrote on Facebook the other day, my wife came to me and said, you never listen to anything I say. And I thought, that's a strange way to start a conversation. In other words, the first half of the conversation went straight through.
Yeah. Monica thought the song guys do it. So I will say, yes, okay. And then she said, what did I say?
Yeah, that's good.
Or asking something and he answered me, and it got yes to me.
So normally I know the half of it.
So the bottom line is we need to listen better, plus we need to repeat it back to each other, and that'll really help. Or to ask the other person if we really understood. Okay.
Sometimes it also means you need to kind of summarize what they've said, even perceiving how they're feeling about something. So if someone says, oh, I've had a terrible day, blah, 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 you can sort of say, well, so you're having trouble. No, really. so you're having trouble, you're having difficulties in life. Tell me more. You know, what do you think about that? That's what psychologists do, of course, when you go and see them. They ask leading questions, tell me more, rather than sort of saying, yes, I have troubles too, and then sort of going off on a tangent. You can just encourage them to say more.
Yeah.
That helps to let them know that you're listening to what they're saying.
You ought to stop building boxes and put a sign out front. Peter the psychologist.
Something I've been trying to train myself to do for years ago. I know I just, if I think it, I say it. I try not to. I try to listen to what people are saying and say something encouraging or tell me more.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
It sort of goes with the...
Yes, it does.
Sometimes it's called reflective listening.
Okay, yeah, reflective and mirroring is pretty much the same kind of thing here. All right, very good. All right, and then the next principle, there is the principle of prayer. And, you know, this is something that in different counseling times that I've had, a lot of couples struggle to pray together. And, you know, I'm not going to embarrass anybody and ask if you guys have struggles with that. But, you know, if you struggle with praying with your spouse, you need to cultivate it, just like he talks about in here. But that is something that is very, very important, to be able to pray together about our issues and our problems. And
just... It doesn't have nothing to do with me. If I say to my son or my daughters, let's pray about it, please. Don't be stupid, Mom.
Yeah.
That's what they say, because they're not believers.
Well, see, that's one of the issues when there are unbelievers, you know, in a marriage situation. That is a tough one. And I think that's another reason why we who know the Lord and have good marriages, we desperately need to pray for those in our congregation who have unsaved spouses. And there's several in our congregation with unsaved spouses. And we desperately need to pray for them, because not just that they'll be able to have a harmonious relationship, but their spouse would come to Christ. And that we really earnestly need to do that, because that can be a great help to them. But praying together, you know, even as he mentions here on the top of 9, he says that it often seems awkward, you know, to pray with someone, if you've never made that a practice, to just say, well, let's pray together. And that seems awkward to do that. And I admit there's times when maybe we're upset and it's not easy to pray together when you're upset. But again, by praying together regularly, it makes it easier to do that even in times when it's more stressful. All right? And so, yes, it may be awkward, but even as he mentions here, the second paragraph on 9, he says that to begin with 30-second prayers before you go to bed. You know, if you're not in a habit of praying together, start out that way. Just pray real short prayers, but then increase them little by little. And just determine to work together at that. And it can be a great blessing to be able to pray together and to pray for each other and to pray with each other. Garrett.
Yeah, I think it's really important as well, because it helps you see yourself sometimes in an argument. Like, somebody says something sharp to you, right? And you feel like you have the right to say something like that. Sometimes you get this mindset of, like, your argument's valid. It's not you or me to me. Well, I'm just trying to defend myself, you know? But then you ask yourself, well, I pray right now, and you realize, no, like, I'm not even where I should be spiritually right now either. It kind of helps you see, like, I might think I'm right defending myself, but technically I'm just way, I'm going backwards myself.
Yeah. No, it does make us stop and take a look at ourselves and make sure we're doing what's right. So.
I've actually got that little book by our Tory, How to Pray.
Good. Good. So, what do you find that hinders praying with your spouse? Is there anything else, specific things that, you know, he mentions awkwardness or just didn't have a habit of that, you know, in your own experience, what do you find makes it hard or difficult or a challenge to pray? Sasha?
If you had an argument and you feel that you're separated from God, that you're not hearing,
Yeah. 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 Good. Good.
I think sometimes, though, like, even if there was an argument just to pray with your spouse, it's also hard if you're not even able to pray yourself, like, just in the day. Like, if the whole day you know you're just not where you're meant to be and you're not praying, like obviously you're not going to want to pray with your spouse.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. So that's good.
Sometimes you're looking at yourself.
Yeah, we need to keep ourselves right with God before we're ever going to be able to pray with our spouse, obviously. That's good.
All right. You could come over being self-righteous. Come and we'll pray about it. I mean, it's not your fault as it is.
So, any other thoughts on that before we move on? Okay, then here in the latter part here, he says your spouse should be the single most important person that you have in your life. And that is very, very true, and we need to work to that end. And he says there, success is possible if we're willing to apply the intentional principles. So these five principles here that he had, he calls them the intentional principles, intentionally disciplining ourselves to do these five things. The intentional principle of responding properly to a comment and touching physically and timing things properly and mirroring the conversation back to what they said and then praying together. These five intentional things can be a big help to us. And so in your own words, the question number one here, what did he mean by intentional communication? I mean, I've kind of said that, but any other thoughts on your take on what he meant by that intentional conversation?
Not just something that happens because it just so happens to be the topic. I mean, going out of your way to guide the conversation towards subject matter.
Yep. Good. Good. Anything else?
If there's something on your mind and you want to discuss it, that's an intentional.
Okay. It's something purposefully that you want to discuss, Sasha?
Not sort of taking for granted that you've been understood well by the receiver of your communication.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, so that is true. I mean, sometimes we just assume that they, I mean, because especially when we're really pursuing something in our defense of something, and we say it, and we think we've made it clear, and it hasn't come across as clear as we thought it was, and then it doesn't get through. Yes?
I think something that I just thought now that might as well help is intentional listening. Sometimes we might intention try and say something, but they might say a bunch of stuff back and we kind of only hear what we want to hear. Yeah. Sometimes it's maybe better to actually ask them a few questions to really get some to them properly.
Yes. All right, so in light of what Garrett just said, why is it that we only hear part of what they're saying when they're communicating with us like that?
Because we're already thinking of what we're going to say.
Exactly. Excellent. We're planning our defense.
What are we trying to get across?
And while we're sitting there planning our defense and they're chattering on about theirs, we're not even paying any attention. And then we don't really answer. We don't really answer the situation.
Still having the same conversation.
Yeah. So, Jared hit a good one there. We need to listen.
Yes.
We need to listen. All right, good. And then this first principle, this first response principle, you know, how would we summarize that in your own words? Anybody want to summarize that first principle? Question number two, if you're not following where I'm at.
I just said the first responder is responsible for repercussions.
Okay. Yeah. So the first responder. So somebody says something, when we respond, we have the choice of egging it on or calming it down. And so it's good. Okay. How did Jesus practice the first response principle?
He turned the other cheek.
Okay, yeah, sort of. Not always.
No.
But he did sometimes. What else did he do? Such.
Well, if he had reacted that it was anger, he wouldn't have remained foolish. So then he wouldn't be a perfect example.
Okay, so
very important.
Okay, he stayed calm. He didn't explode to them. Even the illustration that he gave here of You know, the time when they asked Jesus about paying taxes, and Jesus asked, you know, let's see a coin and whose picture's on it. I mean, it's a brilliant explanation. He says, all right, give unto Caesar the things that are of Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. John Ray.
I think it's not so much that Jesus didn't have moments of expressing visible public anger. It's more that his anger, by example, was never selfish. Like, for example, it was always in context with people defiling like the temple or doing something against God's name. It's not...
Yeah, he definitely...
Never personally. Like, it's not like somebody just insults you when you drive down the road and you burst out like, ah, how dare you say that? But, you know, like, then you've made it personally. You've offended yourself. I mean, I think Jesus' anger was like... It's not that he didn't get angry. It's just his anger wasn't set like, oh, how dare you say that about me? Kind of anger.
Yeah. So his was not a reactionary situation, but he did deal with things sternly. You know, times when he dealt with the Pharisees and called them. So he had some harsh things to say to them, and yet at the same time, he did it appropriately, he did it honestly. They couldn't come back at him and say, well, that wasn't true. What he said was true, and he was careful about how he did it. Okay. Yes, that's true.
When he chased the money changers out of the temple, that's really the only time that he really got angry.
Okay, number four there. What's the best time to implement the physical touch principle? What did the author say here?
As soon as possible.
No, physical touching. So, yeah, when you're getting angry, it might be a good time to...
No, that's not what he said. What did he say? He said before the problem starts. He says if you wait until you're in the middle of it, then you don't want to touch them. So he says touch beforehand to keep yourself calm, and rather than try to touch in the middle of the heated situation, because then you don't feel like touching. You feel like choking them or something, but not touching them lovingly. Okay? Okay. So get started early. All right. And give two examples of wrong time to begin touching, to begin dealing with a touchy conversation. Well, he gave a few there. What's a couple that come to your mind? Maybe ones that you've struggled with. Wrong times.
When you're tired.
Yes, that's not a good time. Or hungry. That's not a good time. Yeah,
but you also say that sometimes there can be issues, you know, even if it's like midnight.
Yes.
To discuss something.
No, I mean he wasn't saying that you should never ever do that, but he's just saying obviously it's not the best timing, and you know. But you know, like one of the things that we were taught before we got married. And it was that, you know, never go to sleep angry. And so, you know, we've had a couple late nights, but and that happens sometimes where it has to be late night to resolve the problem. But that's a good principle to follow there. All right, good. And then number six, restate the principle of mirroring in your own words. We kind of talked through this, and so I think we understand that now. But anybody want to put that in their own words? When we talk about mirroring a conversation.
I actually wanted to say that our work is just another example. You know, they just call it positive communication. You know, if you call up a machine, then you basically need to repeat the same sentence, and then you ask the person, did you copy that? And then he will say yes, basically almost repeating the same thing again. So it's almost like,
okay.
Double 100% sure you're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's
the same thing in the military, don't they?
Yeah.
Alter course to 130. Alter course to 130. And sort of repeating the command back just to make sure they got it right the first time.
Yeah. Because that can cause problems if you assume that is the, and I think that's the same with positive with this mirroring, you know.
Okay.
If you think, you know what the person mean, linked or whatever, yep. But you don't.
Yep, and that's a good thing for us to practice, to make sure that what's been said was accurate, so that we are talking about the right
you
thing.
To make sure that you listen to everything that's being said and not try to think, oh, yeah, I don't know what you're on about, off we go, no, I'm busy.
No. Yeah. No, you're right.
It is what they want to say, because at the end it might be completely different to what the beginning of the story was. Mm.
So number seven here, what did Rob say prevents prayer from from prayer before we begin a touch or touchy conversation?
Tough.
Oh, sorry, tough conversation. I can't even read my writing. What did he say was?
I think sometimes self-doubt, because in some situations you might not even be 100% sure that you really are right. And then if you, I mean, it's one thing to argue with a person, but you're not going to go to God and say, oh God, I've got this position. But, yeah, but if you know kind of that you might be wrong, you might not feel very comfortable. You know, so you kind of know you've done so.
Okay, well, that
depends on what the subject is. I mean, there's some sort of fight. I mean, you can convince yourself that you're right, but you kind of know deep down side. Well, you know, like, yeah, but God might not agree with that, so I'll just not talk about that. Just, you know, have an argument first.
Okay, well, that's probably a valid point, but that's not the one that Rob mentioned. Anybody know the one that he actually specified?
Awkwardness.
No, it's beyond that. It was the root. It was the root for the awkwardness.
No.
Okay. Look back at the. He talks about this in the.
Page 9 is one of the greatest
difficulties. Yes, I know, but on page 8, in the third paragraph up, he tells you the reason for the awkwardness. Pride. All right. So, the awkwardness is a symptom of it that makes it hard, but the pride is what keeps us from it. And, you know, pride will prevent us from praying together. We just are too proud to admit that there's a need, too proud to humble ourselves to be willing to do that. But it goes hand in hand with these other answers you've had, but that's really at the root of it.
Okay. Well, sometimes it's that thing you mentioned before in the past, where, like, even if you are just 1% wrong, you know, like, the right thing to do, if you really want to do what's right, that's what your whole argument is, to come to the right conclusion, then really you should be the bigger person and say, okay, like, they might have said this, but I just need to say sorry for what I did. Sometimes that is kind of like a returning a soft answer. Like, even if they did do something, they, instead of arguing for what they did, if he's honest with himself, it actually helps them kind of say, hey, like, they're not being good as well.
Yep, you're right. It does. And that's not always easy, but there's the pride.
My father used to have a very habit of, if everybody raised their voice, he would start speaking softer and softer. Yep, mate, just stop shouting because you want to hear what he's saying.
That's
but then, I think sometimes when we pray, it can be the same. You know, I had a friend in South Africa. And he and his wife are pastor now. But that time they was also young with some of our close friends. But he mentioned one time, he said he asked the Lord, and he was praying, he wanted to buy a car. And he said, and in his heart, he actually felt, no, he must not do it, you know, because they can't really afford it. But he said, but even after he prayed and asked God, you know, if it was his will, he said he was still continuing going to the bank manager, and then when he was going to the bank manager, you know, he said he was when he was sitting there, and the bank manager said, no, you can't afford it, you know, your finance is not good enough and all that stuff. He said, and then he realized, yeah, he's actually feeling very bad, because he said when he was praying, he already felt in his heart, you know, but he said he did not listen, you know. He said he was still continuing, and I think sometimes God also talks to us, and then we don't listen to what God actually tells us to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that.
God creeping in there.
Okay, so for the next time.